Welcome to a weekly review of North Dakota's legislative news. Now, here's your host, Dave Thompson, with North Dakota Legislative Review.
And welcome to North Dakota Legislative Review. I'm Dave Thompson. Thanks for joining us. There's an issue going about, and there are several bills dealing with this, and that determines about initiated statutes and measures. There are several proposals to try to tighten things up. And under some of the proposals, constitutional measures could have a much tougher road to the ballot. For example, there are at least two proposals where it would require 60% voter approval for a constitutional measure to be approved. One of the other things that is also being looked at is maybe having the legislature take a look at something that the voters pass in a constitutional amendment. There are also a number of changes at the Board of Higher Education being talked about still on the table. Remember, the House turned down the idea of a two-board plan in the first part of the legislative session. Well, there is a bill now before the Senate which would expand the Board of Higher Education from 8 to 11 members, but Governor Burgum wants to push again for a two-board plan. Anything that will come out will require voter approval. And coming up in just a few weeks will be the March budget forecast, and that will determine the spending levels and spending decisions coming up. And a lot of lawmakers that we have been talking to are a bit optimistic because oil prices are creeping back up. But now, as we said, as the calendar has turned to March, we can expect that new state revenue forecast very soon. This session's MARC forecast is expected on the 11th and the 12th. And as political correspondent Chad Mira tells us, this could settle the debate over some key spending issues this session.
There are just a couple months left for lawmakers to set the state budget for the next 2 years. But first, they need a good idea of how much money they have to spend.
We don't want to overshoot it.
Senate Majority Leader Rich Warner and his colleagues are working off a revenue projection released a couple months back. It was with those numbers that the governor proposed a $14.3 billion budget.
We had two forecasting agencies. We split the middle, and we think that maybe even both of them were very conservative.
But all eyes now are on March 11th and 12th. That's when lawmakers get an updated revenue forecast. Warner says it could decide if state employees get a 2% raise or 3%.
If the forecast is correct, that'll even verify that we're okay at 2 and 3.
Or if the governor's plan for the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library is approved.
If it would happen to be a forecast that would be lower than the one we had in January, no question, it would have a very negative effect on any library funding.
Senator Tim Mathern, a member of the Appropriations Committee, says any change in the numbers can have a big effect. He even says it could be a matter of life or death.
It'll be a difference between a high suicide rate or a lower suicide rate.
He and Warner both say behavioral health services could suffer with a poor forecast.
Mental illness, drug addiction, those kind of programs, and they have really come to crisis proportion.
But they remain optimistic due to the conservative approach in the last one.
We are now joined by State Representative Carla Rose Hansen from Fargo. She's a Democrat and also the Assistant Minority Leader in the House. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
As an Assistant Leader, what are your jobs, basically?
It's primarily to help the Josh Boucher, our minority leader, but I also do some work to help our caucus communicate better about our priorities. My background is in corporate communications, so what our leadership team has done is really look at the strengths that everyone has brought to the table, and so my role is really to help people communicate a little better along with our staff.
At like a 20 to 40,000 foot level, where are you at with your priorities?
So at the beginning of the session, the NPL legislative leaders outlined our priorities for the legislative session. So we set out an agenda that really has four main themes. They include making sure that we create opportunities for everyone to achieve their American dream. This really revolves around education as well as giving people with a criminal past a second chance. We also want to emphasize making sure that we have good public services when people need them. We also have a priority around strengthening families and communities. A lot of that has to do with public safety or behavioral health services that we really need to shore up. And then our fourth priority is creating an economy that works for all. And so some of that revolves around tax policy, but it also has to do with really expanding our workforce development, since so many businesses have a workforce shortage.
So where do you think you're at?
Well, the Dem NPL caucus in both the House and the Senate are small, but I do believe we've made some big progress on with these priorities. I think we've had some big wins in advocating for the priorities that North Dakotans have. So we've had some good wins in terms of, for example, giving people a second chance. Representative Schneider advanced a bill related to ban the box that really helps people advance in the interview process with a public employer so that they can get further along in the interview process. And we know that when people have employment, there's less chance of them reoffending. Senator Dotsenrod has advanced a study to look at the problem about our rural grocery stores in North Dakota. So that's an issue that impacts our economies as well as our communities and families. Senator Hogan has been a huge champion for behavioral health, really putting forward a really great proposal that will help the families and youth in terms of the shortage about addiction services and behavioral health services, mental health services across the state. There's some good proposals related to services in communities, targeted case management services in the schools. And then just overall too, we've been really advocating for improved funding for K-12, improved raises for our public employees to make sure that our public sector workforce remains competitive with the private sector. And then also nursing homes and DD providers, making sure that their reimbursement rates are strong enough to keep them going in a solid way in North Dakota.
So you're not busy at all.
We keep very busy.
Oh, speaking of busy, you're on Judiciary, which happened to be one of the busiest committees this time.
Yes.
You had a number of bills, probably 100 or more.
We had approximately 100 pieces of legislation in the House Judiciary.
A couple of things that you talked about. Number one was giving people a second chance. That did,
yes.
You know, has gone far. But mm-hmm. One that was actually proposed by Shannon Rose Jones of Fargo didn't get very far. I just wanted to get your take on it, this idea of decriminalization of marijuana,
yes.
You know, for very small amounts.
Yes. That bill, I don't recall the number, but that bill did fail in the House floor. It was a very close vote. What that bill would have done would be to, as you said, reduce the penalty if a person had a small amount of marijuana. So it's not making marijuana legal, it's not making it recreational like some past measures, for example, but rather reducing it from a criminal penalty of a certain level to just a fine. And the idea behind that was really to make sure that a person caught with a small amount of marijuana, it doesn't have a negative effect on their ability to get housing or employment or even professional licensing. So unfortunately that bill failed, but you never know what can happen, you know, over the second half of the session either.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because are there vehicles out there where that this idea might be able to be brought back up?
Well, that'd certainly be a good question for Representative Rose Jones next week, but I sure hope so. I think it's a valid idea that we should explore.
One thing that you pushed during the session was this red flag bill, mm-hmm. where you could go for a civil seizure, if you want to call it, of a person's weapons if family and friends can go to a court and say this person is a danger to either him or herself or maybe to somebody else. That did not fare very well. But it was the first bite of the apple.
That's right. It was disappointing. What that bill would have done, it was 1537, I believe was the number, would have created something called a public safety protection order. So it's, like you said, a civil process where either a family member or law enforcement could petition the court to have a weapon temporarily removed. Really the intent of that bill was to save lives by preventing suicides, which is a significant problem in North Dakota, as well as averting a school shooting or another active shooter situation. And that was the true intent of the bill. It's been passing in a lot of other states. It's been around since 1999 in Connecticut and 2004 in Indiana, where Mike Pence was governor. And it's passed more recently in states like New York, and I believe Minnesota is considering it this week. So there's sure some momentum to make sure that we're doing something to prevent gun violence across the country in a way that provides strong due process and is constitutional, as has been tested in the courts. But we'll continue to partner with the education leaders and law enforcement leaders, suicide prevention advocates, to see what other solutions we might be able to pursue over the next few years.
Well, it's not necessarily before judiciary, but I wanted to get your take on this idea of moving the prison, the domino effect, closing New England, moving the New England prisoners to Mandan, or I mean to Bismarck, to the MRCC, moving the MRCC to the Jamestown, and then building a new Jamestown State Hospital. That hasn't gotten a lot of traction right now. What do you think? Is there any chance of that happening?
I think there is a real interest in studying that issue more, and that's really what we've seen happen, is having some of those big ideas be turned into a study so that we can take the time to really explore all the ramifications of that domino effect, like you said, and really explore what the different uses of the different buildings could be, what shortcomings are there currently. And so I think we just need some more time in the legislature to look at that.
So probably not this session, but maybe there will be a study, look at it for two years, and then come up with a plan.
Yeah, that's likely.
Now, you did earlier mention behavioral health, and that seemed to be one of the big issues coming into the session, because there was a lot of talk about that. Yeah. You had the Schulte report, you had the other report that was just recently done, basically saying there's a crying need for behavioral health services, especially in rural North Dakota, and especially in West River Country. What's your sense of progress on that front?
Yes. As you mentioned, the study report did come up with a long list of recommendations that North Dakota really should do to address the crisis around behavioral health. That's both with addiction treatment and mental health treatment. I'm really optimistic in what I'm seeing come over from the Senate. There's some strong recommendations in terms of getting more behavioral health services in our schools, community-based services, targeted case management. There's a new concept called mental health vouchers. So it's modeled really similarly to the substance abuse disorder vouchers that really enables easier access to services across our state. So I'm hopeful that in combination, some of these improvements with policy as well as budget will improve access to services across our state and really remove some barriers. I'd always like to see it go further, but I really do think there's some good strides here.
But there is bipartisan support. You know, you've got Senator Lee from West Fargo, you've got Senator Hogan from Fargo, and some people in the House who are really pushing this.
I'm really hopeful that it continues to advance in the, once it arrives on the House side.
And Senator Wardner is a very big champion of it as well.
He is a strong advocate.
In terms of some of the things, you know, that does also dovetail with judiciary, because some of the things that judiciary has been trying to do with justice reinvention is try to keep people out of prison as much as you can. And in behavioral health, it was anecdotal, and there were some statistics to back it up, that judges in the West were sentencing people to prison because that's where they could get the treatment.
That's right. So approximately 70% of people who get tangled up in our criminal justice system have either an addiction, a mental health diagnosis, or both. And it's true, we heard a lot of anecdotal evidence about judges saying, you know, well, in order to get you services, we'll put you in jail, which is not the right environment for a person who really their problem is that they have a behavioral health issue. The justice reinvestment reforms that we passed 2 years ago, like you mentioned, really meant to intervene into the situation when a person is coming out of incarceration. Let's get them set up for success so that they don't reoffend and come back into the justice system. So we're providing them with some case management type services, but also getting them connected to the behavioral health services they might need. In some of the new policies that we're seeing this session, we're looking to expand that offering going into the next biennium, which is a great thing because we've seen some early success from the reforms that we passed 2 years
ago. Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. There's some statistics that show some success then.
Yes, it's very metric-based, and it is early because one of the metrics that we look at is recidivism rates. You know, what is the rate of someone reoffending? And, you know, you want to look at that over a period of time. But the early indications, if I recall, are very positive. And so we're very hopeful and looking forward to seeing that expand.
Well, one thing that you mentioned was about state employee raises. And that seems to also be bipartisan support for that, because state employees had to go 2 and sometimes 3 years without a raise.
That's right.
And now there's a proposal, 2 and 2, the House has passed so far, mm-hmm. 2 and 3 in the Senate. You've got the revenue forecast coming in March 10th, 11th, 12th, mm-hmm. right in there. Are you optimistic that something else is going to happen?
Yeah, I'm hopeful that we could get to a 3 and 3 rate for our public employee raises. We really need to look at public employee raises in the context of the overall labor market in North Dakota. You know, we have a workforce shortage, and we hope that we attract the best and brightest to our public employee positions because they have important jobs to do, you know, providing public services to the citizens of North Dakota. And the public employee positions have to compete with the private marketplace. And so I think a 3 and 3 raise really allows the public employers to compete with the private.
I know this revenue forecast is probably held close to the chest right now.
Yes.
But are you hearing anything, anything anecdotally from people? Are they optimistic? Are they looking forward to it? Do they think because oil prices are ticking up, things might be better?
I do hear a lot of optimism about what the revenue forecast will be when we get it on March 11th and 12th. I'm hopeful that the price per barrel ticks up several dollars so that we can make sure that we fund all the unmet needs across the state of North Dakota.
And that leads into Prairie Dog.
Okay.
You were one of the yes votes on Prairie Dog.
I was.
And that passed overwhelmingly, but there was a long debate on it.
It was.
Now it's in the Senate. We don't know what's going to happen with it. Why did you support Prairie Dog?
I really see there's a lot of need for infrastructure across the state of North Dakota. I mean, we have a heavy reliance on federal funds for example, our roads and our bridges. And so I like the idea of making sure that all the communities across North Dakota have some access to funds that they can put toward their infrastructure needs. Where I live, we have a concern among a lot of people around the specials. And so if we could dedicate some of the money that we get in my community toward the major thoroughfares, for example, that could put less burden on the specials that we have to pay, as just one example. But I do like the idea that it serves all the communities in North Dakota.
And of course, this is set up that it's kind of a bucket at the end of the line.
Yep.
If we get enough, you know, oil revenue, that bucket will start filling, and then mm-hmm. cities can start tapping into that.
That's right.
Any idea what Fargo might be in line for?
I've heard the number, but I don't remember it off
yeah.
the top of my head.
I've heard $50 million, something like that. Might be more
maybe
than that.
Maybe 30.
Maybe 30?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd have to check.
Yeah. There's all sorts of things that play on that.
Yeah.
So are you optimistic personally about the revenue forecast?
I am, and I guess I'm an optimistic person in general. So I always think that North Dakota is, you know, got bright things ahead of it, and I think the revenue is part of that. One thing I am concerned about, though, is in terms of revenue, is the proposal around eliminating the income tax. So that passed the House, it now heads toward the Senate, and I think that's a misguided idea. When we look at the revenue model that we deal with for North Dakota, you know, people often talk about the multi-legged stool, three-legged stool, if you will, property tax, income tax, and sales tax, and eliminating income tax, I think would be a mistake. It would put more reliance on the other legs, put us out of balance, if you will. And so I am concerned that a vote to eliminate income tax would be a vote to increase property tax, and I think that would be the wrong direction.
Okay. I have to ask you about this Board of Higher Education, yes. the gyrations that's gone through, the 3-board to 2-board to the expanded 1-board.
Okay.
When you had the 2-board bill, how did you vote on it?
I voted yes on that one.
And why?
So my district is adjacent to NDSU, and so I have a lot of people who work at NDSU who live in my district, and they were very favorable to the idea of having a board, one board for the research institutions, one board for the other educational institutions across the state of North Dakota. So I listened to my constituents, and I voted, you know, the way that they wanted me to. I do see merits. I see both sides of the issue, and I certainly see the merits, and so I followed the wishes of my constituents. You know, as you know, it didn't pass, but there's always the second half of the session to see what might happen next.
Well, not to put too fine a point on it, but Governor Burgum is still pushing for a 2-board
yes.
solution and is
yeah.
asking the Senate, which has another resolution,
mm-hmm.
to amend the resolution to make it a 2-board bill.
That's right.
Any chance, because the House turned it down and it was a fairly strong no vote.
Right.
Do you think there's any chance that maybe it could come back and you might be able to get a few more votes?
I think it's dangerous to predict what might happen in the last final days of the session.
Yeah, the OMB bill could be real interesting.
That's
as
right.
It always is.
That's the catch-all.
Do you see any sticky wickets that could, you know, at least delay the end of the session?
That's also hard to predict. The ethics measures, I think, are, you know, a new factor in our legislative session this year. So we have two pieces of legislation that we're considering right now. As you know, there's a Senate bill and there's a House bill. In my opinion, the Senate bill upholds the spirit and the intent of Measure 1, the ethics measure that the voters of North Dakota passed last November. The House bill doesn't uphold that spirit and intent quite as well, I think. So how those get resolved, I think, will be an interesting thing to watch as well.
All right. I ask every legislator this,
okay. And
we just have a few seconds left, so let me ask you, if you had to put a bet on when you will adjourn, how many days in will you adjourn?
With 5 days remaining will be my guess.
Okay,
my
so bet. 70. So yeah. You're talking 70.
Five.
75.
75,
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, you're a little less optimistic than Dwight Cook, who says maybe 65.
Oh, wow.
So we'll
All
see right. what happens.
All right.
Our guest, Carla Rose Hansen from Fargo, she's a Democrat and the assistant floor leader for the Democrats in the House. Thank you again.
Yes, absolutely.
Governor Doug Burgum testified this week in front of the Senate Education Committee. He's still fighting to create two boards to govern higher education, despite the fact that the House struck down the idea earlier this month. He's now hoping the Senate will bring it back to life. After the two-board proposal failed in the House, Senate leaders unveiled a proposal that would expand the one board already in place. But the governor said that doesn't go far enough. We caught up with him to find out why he's still pushing for something lawmakers have already rejected.
This is an important topic for people to understand because the governance model for higher education in North Dakota is hardwired into our Constitution, and we can only change it with a vote of the people. So the discussion going now is where will this go? Will it lead to a resolution which could be on the ballot in November of 2020? That's the discussion we're having today, but excited and grateful that the Senate is keeping the conversation alive.
Are you concerned that maybe what the lawmakers are thinking isn't in line with what the voters would want in this situation?
Well, I think there's always, in any political process, it's always easier to make an incremental move than it is to make a leap forward. And I think again, it's great we got consensus that people think that we need to make a move and move forward, because that's not even existed sometimes in the past. But I'd say the only disagreement is the degree of the length of move, but knowing that I hope it's not another 80 years before we get on the ballot to change it, but if we're going to change it once every 80 years, we better make a change that goes beyond incremental, that actually sets us up for the success for the next 50 years.
And Chad Mira joins us. So Chad, following that, I'm going to ask you, what do you think the chances are of going back to a two-board model?
Well, I don't want to make any predictions, but I will say this. He testified earlier this week in front of the Senate Education Committee, and the committee members were listening, and you could tell they were taking his request seriously, asking a lot of good questions. So you never know. There is a resolution out there to expand the board that's already in place. Well, a lot of lawmakers are kind of getting on board that maybe we do need to make some changes. Mm-hmm. We just don't know if they're willing to commit to creating a whole second board yet.
Speaking of change, as we talked about it earlier, the new revenue forecasts are coming up on the 11th and 12th.
Yep.
One's going to be from the state forecaster, one's going to be from the legislative forecaster.
Yeah.
What are you hearing?
Well, a lot of optimism. People are excited about it. And it's interesting, we have two forecasts. We'll talk more about that in a second. But, a lot of people are excited about this upcoming forecast because the ones that came out in December and January were intentionally meant to be a little more conservative. You know, when they start off the session, they don't want to be passing all these bills and then find out they don't have the money to spend on them. But, you know, we have two forecasts. We'll have to see if they differ at all. They're doing this because the oil revenue has been kind of difficult to predict in the past. Obviously, it's a very volatile market. So we have two forecasts now, and we'll see if they have different outcomes.
And we'll have to get back to that next week because mm-hmm. we run out of time.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us for Legislative Review. I'm Dave Thompson.